two, reel four.
Under which you had to make that attack on the enemy helicopter, please?
Yes, we had indications that passed to us over the radio from one of the ships that helicopters had been seen transiting from West Falkland towards East Falkland and the landing area. And so myself and my wingman let down to low level and flew down the track, trying to see whether this was whether we could find the helicopter. In fact, eventually we found the helicopter had landed, and we then carried out some attacks on it on the ground. At the time, I don't think we didn't actually see the aircraft burn. We were firing guns at it. Whether in fact, and subsequently we learnt that the aircraft was hit, but because the helicopter was sitting in essentially on a peat bog, there was very little indication that the rounds were hitting. You certainly couldn't see the rounds hitting the ground. Of course, against a hard target or anything with dust around it, you would have actually probably seen the being able to see where the rounds had hit. So, in retrospect, I don't actually know whether I hit the aircraft or whether, in fact, we hit any people. It was a relatively minor event. The helicopter was not able to fly again, so I suppose that was the object of the mission.
I think you're in a fairly authoritative position to be able to say something about the question of censorship in war and how open one is able to be in modern warfare.
I think that modern warfare is is now going to be totally different to any warfare that's happened in the past. The Falklands was unique in many ways, but in the 1982 Falklands, we had, from a military point of view, the ability to totally control what the media were saying. There were a number of press embarked in the ships, but they were a limited number, a couple of dozen or so altogether. The only way that they could get around was using military means of transportation. And therefore, if you didn't want the press anywhere, they did find it very difficult to get there. And the only means they had of filing reports was using military means of communications. Even the commercial satellite communication systems that were not fitted in the warships but were fitted in the ships taken up from trade, the stuffed ships, merchant ships, they of course were under military control. And so the ability of media press to file reports was pretty strictly controlled. It was difficult for them to get anything out that was not actually approved by the military. And so that was really a unique situation. That will not happen again. Communications have improved so dramatically that now the likelihood is that wherever you are, I mean, even in a rerun of the Falklands conflict, the media would be there. And they'd be there with their own communication system, their own satellite communications, and you would have television transmitted at the same time as speech. You'd have reporters on the beach, as it were, witnessing what was going on, whether you liked it or not. And this is something I think the military is having to come to grips with. We saw it in Vietnam to a certain extent. The Americans in the Vietnam era were subjected to almost constant media publicity about what was going on, and we saw it particularly in the Gulf, to a greater extent probably, where you had the situation of reporters in Baghdad talking about weapons flying past their windows on the way to the target. That is very much with us, and so censorship is something that really is we don't have the ability to censor things in global terms now. We're going to have to live with and manage the media. The media will have to work with the military, or vice versa, the military will have to work with the media in the future. The message, I think, that I take very clearly to my own heart as a result of the Falklands, and indeed of subsequent actions, and the previous ones, is really very simple, and that is that it is training, it is people that count in wartime, in action, and it is the training of those people that is really the most important factor. Equipment has an important part to play. Clearly you need to be reasonably well up with state-of-the-art equipment, but it is always going to be people that manage equipment, and it is the training of those people and the ability in peacetime to train the people the way that they're going to operate in war that is going to be absolutely vital. And this impacts, I think, every aspect, every facet of military thinking, and it must continue to impact that thinking, that peacetime operations, exercises, they have got to happen, and they've got to happen in realistic conditions. This is very, very difficult to achieve in practice, and it becomes increasingly more difficult. It becomes difficult to fly and fight your aircraft at low level. Noise complaints, for instance, are they're very real. It is a problem finding parts of the world where you can fly at low level, make lots of noise, and quite reasonably, people have their rights. People don't like the noise, and so it's difficult to achieve. But the bottom line of this is that you have got to practice in peace the way that you are going to fight in war, and people in war, if you face them with doing things differently to what they're used to doing, they never do things better in war, in my experience, than they do in peacetime. They maybe do it as well as they do in peace, or perhaps slightly less well. If you invite people in war to do something different, then that is going to present problems. To a certain extent, people can do things slightly differently in war, but any major changes is going to be a problem. And therefore, it comes back to training, comes back to having the right people, being able to train, and there's an old saying that the person who wins in war is the person who makes the least mistakes. I believe that is very true, and that will be true in the future, as it always has been in the past.
Well, you got a decoration in the Falklands, I think. Was it for the Falklands?
Yes, I got the Air Force Cross, although that really came after the Falklands. It was a combination of Falklands and subsequent operations, and so it was for general sort of aviation duties, Falklands and other events.
Warlike operations after the Falklands?
No, well, during the immediate period after the Falklands, I was involved in taking forming yet another squadron, 809 squadron, again reforming it, to go embark in HMS Illustrious, which had been brought forward from the makers and brought into service early, and we deployed down to the Falklands area and essentially relieved the carriers that were down there, providing air defence, and my squadron provided air defence of the ships and the Falkland Islands based on Stanley Airfield for the period from really August of 1982 through till November, when the first Royal Air Force Phantom aircraft were able to come down. The airfield at Stanley had been extended and rebuilt during that immediate period after the conflict. It had been laid with matting and reconstructed in such a way that Phantom aircraft could operate. But the only aircraft that could operate up to that stage were the short takeoff, vertical landing Sea Harrier aircraft, and we operated from the bomb-cratered Stanley Airfield until it was rebuilt. We operated from aluminium matting and bits of the taxiway and what have you that were left of the airfield.
Obviously, you were a professional pilot in the Navy, so you had your duty to perform. But as far as the political objective of wresting control from the Argentinians was concerned, were you and your colleagues happy about that objective?
I think military people who have trained to do a job of work ought not to question the political aspects, certainly at the time. All the people I was involved with had trained to fly and fight aircraft. In my own case, I'd flown for 20 years. The happened that I was in command of a fighter squadron. If you like, this Falklands conflict had come at the right time in my aviation career. It was the culmination, in a sense, of my aviation career. The very gratifying thing to me was that the most of my operations up to that stage had been exercises and practice. I spent quite a long while training people to fly, and in particular training people to fight aircraft, to operate aircraft in warlike activities. It had all, in the main, in fact entirely, had been practice. So the Falklands was really the first time we properly put these practices to the test. And of course it was enormously gratifying to me that we were able to win, that our theories on how to fight the Sea Harrier in particular were, they worked. And actually they worked very well. I would not question the political decision to go down. I mean, I had been trained, and as I said, all my colleagues had been trained. We'd been trained to fly and fight the Sea Harrier from ships at sea. We were doing what we had been trained to do, what we were paid to do.